You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are listening to me today on Dr. Michelle Live. 5734BREAD4. You can also email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. So, let's see, what are we going to talk about today? Have you ever been in a situation where you're in this long involved conversation or a series of conversations with a friend, with a coworker, with a boss, with a spouse, a family member, and you just come out confused? You have no idea what really just transpired, although you are in a conversation that has the pentameter and has the emotional nuances of a conversation that actually had a beginning, a middle, and an end, but you still have no idea what the heck is going on. Well, we talk about that a lot with politicians. And now it seems since we've had, and I'm not going to talk about politics, but I want to use this as an example. It seems that since we've had our last presidential election, not only has everything been exploded, not only what the president is doing, but all the stuff that actually happened during the last presidency that no one ever really talked about or even paid attention to or knew, it was never brought up, that somehow is getting piled onto this. It's like taking out your garbage on garbage day, but going to all the different closets and taking out all the different bags of garbage that you just let pile up. And pretty soon it's like, yep, it's all garbage, but here you are, Mr. Garbage Man, on Tuesday, you get to do all of it. Here's 5 years worth of garbage. And there's problems with that. There are lots of problems with that. But what happens is that we are in our political world, we just get one piece of rhetoric after another. It's all rhetoric. However, we can put it into more natural and updated language, which I will do for you. But the concept here and the bottom line is that you're left with the feeling that you really just don't know. You see the lips moving, but you just don't know what was said. And now you get that piled on with all the disasters that laid at one person's feet. So we don't know, is it true? Is it not true? Then we find out that, you know what? You won't ever know whether it's true because all we have is fake news. And then you have someone say, no, don't believe that because that's fake news. Well, is that fake news telling us that that was fake news? I mean, you can write this stuff because it's written in psychological thrillers. That's where it's written. It's written in the late 1800s. It's written in the early 1900s, the Brave New Worlds, and all, where you have the mind police and the doublespeak and all these different cognitive confusions that keep people in a state of constant uncertainty. It's unfair. It's unkind. And all it does is tend to demoralize. It's called learned helplessness. Because if you go right out and you start talking about this thing you are so impassioned about, and someone goes, oh, I'm sorry, that's fake news. Well, you're deflated. Then you go somewhere else and you try to get a straight answer. You don't get a straight answer. It's become the way that we speak. So lest that be too vague, I'm going to get into some specifics. I want to talk to you today about cognitive dissonance and crazy-making talk. And crazy-making talk is the unofficial official word for what happens in usually relationships with narcissistic personality disorders and a mental control, mental abuse. It happens everywhere from military brainwashing 101. They don't call it brainwashing anymore, but brainwashing 101, you can find it online when you look at the different coursework in propaganda, all the way to a relationship between a guy picking a girl up in a bar and then going from there. It's not complicated, but it is confusing. I also want to go back to my favorite, of course, Job 12:7, ask the animals, because here is where we can ask the animals. You want to see a cat lose its hair. You want to see a dog biting its own tail or eating its own paws. You want to see a bird lose its feathers. You make things confusing. Confusion. Mental confusion. You want me over here? You want me over there? What do you want me to do? What am I supposed to do here? What am I supposed to do there? What are you talking about? Do I get the food? Do I not get the food? Do I get love or do I get kicked in the jaw? Bringing this down to a common denominator is the person who helps me train Mozart, my dog, Nikki, who's fabulous, was working with this dog who loved her. Just completely loved her. You could tell she was just, this dog was just enamored with Nikki. However, Nikki tells a story about this dog because really not too many people can get around this dog. This dog was in the dog version of physical and mental abuse. When she drove by, she heard a squeal, the cry of a wounded animal, just in this very crowded neighborhood. And she just backed up and said, I stuck my nose in where it shouldn't have been stuck in or where people thought it wouldn't be stuck in. And she saw a dog, obviously, in some kind of distress, but not appearing to be in any obvious danger. So she goes up to the house and talks to the person and asks, well, you know, what's going on here with this dog? Without being confrontative, just trying to say, hey, listen, I happened to hear this and was just checking. And as she got closer to the dog, she realized the dog had an embedded collar in its neck and had maggots in this place. It's pretty graphic, I know. And when she was talking to the person, here's this beautiful dog, purebred, who's got maggots on its neck because of the way the dog is being treated. And the person who owned the dog, I can't even talk to you in the language that the person was using about this dog. It was the lowest form of being on the earth, only said much more graphically, and it wasn't good for anything. And I will tell you the rest of the story on the other side of the break and how it will relate to our cognitive dissonance, crazy-making speech, and why we need 4 very simple things in our lives and how they will change your mental health and those around you.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and we are walking down this road together, Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4, DM Live at breadboxmedia.com. We are talking today, basically, 4 very simple things that if you can keep this in your head as a constant checklist, you will be far ahead of the game. I don't do this, so this is why I know. It's always a struggle for me. My world, my upbringing, my exploration into life and into more years than I care to say of education cause me, help me, train me to do the exact opposite of what I'm going to tell you. Although, when you get down to raw learning, you have to have these four simple things I will tell to you. You must do this. And if you can do this with yourself, you can use it as a checklist for yourself in interactions with other people. If you can indeed think about this with your children, your communication to your children and how your children communicate to you and what you expect in the outside world, you will be healthier. Because we're always left in a puddle when we come across this cognitive dissonance. We are always left in a puddle trying to put together the pieces of how our intuition is going, run, run, danger, danger, not computing. And our intellect is saying, well, let's think about this maybe. And you weave down that primrose path with the speaker, whether it's a government, whether it's a spouse, whether it's a boyfriend, whether it is a child, a parent, a librarian, it doesn't matter. All right. So back to this dog. Really, Job 12:7 never ceases to amaze me in how God directed us to look at his kingdom. And you know what? What better place to look when we are in a world of mental craziness with the internet, with our news and our fake news and our fake news about our fake news and our Instagrams and our retouching and nothing is ever what it seems. Is that what you really look like? I don't know, because I know too many people who, even with their own family, retouch all their photos. They'll show me photos from the wedding and I'll think, wow, you look so fabulous. And I go, yeah, well, I totally retouched these. Well, it's like, why? I know, I'm sitting here right with you. I know what you look like. So it's not, again, I'm not judging this. I just find sometimes I have to laugh. I have to have humor. And I fall to the same things I really do. So back to the dog with the awful wound in its neck and this owner who had such little regard for the being in his charge. He saw him as one thing and one thing only. The owner saw this beautiful purebred. And if you bought this particular breed, it's Malinois, I can say that. It's a Malinois. If you bought a Malinois purebred, it would probably be a bit expensive. So here's this person who has this dog who's got the collar has already eroded into the dog's neck with maggots in the wound. The dog is howling when you've heard the nuance of the different kinds of pain than the helpless pain, when you hear the nuances in that kind of agony, which I have as a doctor, and I have as also a person that's been around in life, you all of a sudden realize you've heard something you've never heard before. It's just like, wow, I've never heard that before. And so this is what this dog trainer and dog rescuer heard. She had heard it before, but very rare. So it caused her to stop. It was a signal going out from this dog. But the trainer looked at this dog in one way, and that's in a very narcissistic, utilitarian way. This dog there was no participation or interaction. This dog needed to perform exactly what the owner intended, or this dog was useless and to be punished. And the punishment was not so much, oh, you did something bad, I'm going to punish you, which doesn't work with dogs anyway, but it was more of doing the same thing over and over and over, causing the dog, not seeing the dog was confused. The dog didn't know what it was supposed to do. A dog will do anything you ask it to do, because that's the nature of a dog. Just like a little child oftentimes will do the same thing. We have this human nature that we can't see the bad. We can't see the behind the scenes manipulation oftentimes if we're fairly decent people. It's difficult to see. Now, when you live long enough and you had enough run-ins, or you see the effects of people, either you work in the jails or you work in a psych ward or something like that, or you work in foster care, or you work, you know, some of these really, where you really have your hands in things, human trafficking, whatever, you see this. But if you don't, and you're just, you know, just regular person on the street, like most of us are, it's hard. You don't just come up with the idea of wonder what their ulterior motive is, wonder how they're seeing the situation. You just kind of think if they're talking to you, somebody's selling you a house, they're going to do their job. So you expect them to do their job and they're going to make money. So you know that that's their agenda. But at the same time, you kind of expect that there's a collaboration. Well, in this cognitive dissonant world, in this crazy making world, there isn't collaboration, but there also isn't accountability. There's no accountability. The person weaves all these words in a place to where you just feel like something happened, but you don't know what. So I'm going to read to you a little excerpt from a blog that actually is devoted to narcissism and psychopathy, the psychopathic personality, which we're not necessarily talking about now, but we are talking about cognitive dissonance, and it all has the same effect. But she, her name is Claudia something. I'll get it at the bottom, I think. Claudia Moscovici. Anyway, so she has devoted many years to this, having been in a relationship with a psychopath, actually, at one point in her life. And she's also a writer, and she's written a couple books, and I think she might even be a screenwriter as well. So she, in this article called A Painful I can't say the word. I'm going to redo it. Incredulously Painful: Psychopathy and Cognitive Dissonance. In other words, it's incredulous. It's painful. And it's also confusing. But she quotes the fact that cognitive dissonance is what happens when we have a contradictory experience. As she calls it, it is a kind of internal battle between clinging to denial and accepting the truth. And in any of these situations, if it's something at work, at home, if with your priest, whatever, I don't care. It's the internal battle between, they look fine on the outside. They've seemed to always be up front all the time. But why is this confusing? And the truth is, it's freaking confusing. It's not meant. You do not have clarity. You cannot get a straight answer. So the cognitive dissonance is marked by this inner contradiction that the victim's attitude has toward the victimizer. Now, I'm going to, on the other side of the break, we're going to come back, read you a really brief thing, how she quotes George Orwell in the book 1984, because it is called doublethink. It isn't logical, but it's what happens. And when you get this checklist I'm going to give you, you can test your interactions against this checklist and keep yourself out of cognitive dissonance. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You are with me on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4. We are talking about four things that we will be talking about, saving the best for last, that you can use. Easy. They're only four little words. on a daily basis to test your communications, to test your inner workings, to test how you're delivering yourself to someone else. It's not necessarily automatic. You get into habits of speech. I had an experience a long time ago. Well, I want to finish up the story about the dog too, I had an experience a long time ago. 20 years ago. I was asked in my other life when I was doing a lot of work with trauma and body work and things like that, to give a lecture to a school of massage therapy. And when I met with the owner of the school of massage therapy, it was a campus, basically. It was a very well-respected, a very established school, turning out very good massage therapists. Lots of schooling. It took a lot. It was very rigorous. And I was asked to give a lecture. And I will tell you what the lecture was supposed to be on. But first, this was my first wake-up call. Even though I knew this was happening in our culture, because I was getting I just want to tear my hair out sometimes. We started in this descriptive, narrative, non-definable language. You can read it right now today. You go, and believe me, I am a sucker for different nutritional supplements and things like that. I research them all. I think about them all. I've tried them all, most of them. But, and I know the dangers. I know the dangers very, very much so. But on all of them, the more legitimized the supplement world, which is billions and billions of dollars a year, it's trying to mimic in a natural way with prettier labels the drug company way of marketing and the drug company way of presentation. But you go right now, and it will always say, and maybe they're changing it because people are getting tired of hearing it, support. It's going to support, it supports the lungs. Well, what in the world does that mean? So back to my story. It supports, on and on. And I understand that you never want to say never, and you never want to say always, because there's always going to be a contradiction somewhere along the line to just about everything as we learn more. So in my talking to this owner, this woman who's in charge of all this, I could not for the life of me get what she really wanted me to talk about, because she never said anything directly. Ever. She calls me to have a meeting, to ask me to do a lecture. And I said, well, what would you like me to lecture on? And then we started talking about supporting and this and that and support this and that, we all know X, Y, Z. And I just am thinking, I said, what do you really want me to, just say it, just tell me, just say the words. And what she wanted was, and I just said, what you want is, and she said, yes. But I said, what you want is you want me to tell your therapist that when they do body work, that how they touch, where they touch, when they touch, and not knowing that it might happen, they can trigger body memories that could throw the person into a post-traumatic stress disorder, flashback possible, and how to deal with that. Yes, that's what I want. Okay, good. All the other stuff about supporting and this and that, it didn't make any difference. Didn't make sense. So that was that was like my early call about how institutionalized, how normalized our inability to say anything directly. I think it very much came from, we came from a very black and white world in the 40s, 50s, 30s, 20s, all the way up. And as we got into the 60s and 70s, 1960s, 1970s, people started arguing against that somehow it wasn't open enough. And then we just somehow morphed all these decades later into now we don't know anything. So in our last segment, I'm going to give you those four simple things, because they are simple.
not easy to necessarily implement because we have habits. But let's define the cognitive dissonance a little bit again. So this woman, Claudia, in her article about psychopathy and cognitive dissonance, and we aren't talking about psychopaths now necessarily, but we were talking about the elements that were first obviously noted in psychopaths, criminals, that we see now is becoming more and more prevalent in our worlds of dysfunctional relationships, narcissistic behavior, emotional abuse, political abuse, journalistic abuse. And George Orwell, in his book, 1984, when he talked about brainwashing in a totalitarian regime, and brainwashing in a totalitarian regime can be a regime of two, you and your boyfriend. So many women say, how does this keep happening to me? So what she says is this: doublethink is not logical, but I'm quoting her now. It is a common defense mechanism for coping with deception, domination, and abuse. Victims engage in doublethink or cognitive dissonance in a partly subconscious attempt to reconcile the contradictory claims and behavior of the disordered individual who have taken over their lives. Now, that sounds pretty extreme. I want to put this in the realm of employer. If an employer or a boyfriend, let's put it, you know, just let's get down to some simple relationships, even a child, where they're telling you something or promising something. It's the old joke, you know, the checks in the mail, or if you just do this, I will love you in the morning. The contradictory claim, or just let me do this now, Mom, and I will clean my room forever. Contradictory claims, and the behavior is the opposite. You're telling me many people have gone in these situations where I know someone who had a father who had dementia, or started the early times of dementia. He was going to work every day, putting on those clothes and making all this money, but the bills were coming in, and then all of a sudden the bill collectors, and all of a sudden the mortgage, you know, was being taken over and the house was being foreclosed on. So there's a difference between what is being said and the behavior and what the reality is. And when that starts, the common defense mechanism for all beings, including dogs and humans, is to try to make sense, reconcile the contradictions. You say, if you're a dog, that poor little dog, you say, come here, buddy, come here, and then you beat him. Different contradictory claim and a behavior that is completely out of the blue. So we're going to bring this all back home with your four simple things to which you can checklist yourself through today. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
So I want to go back to what she says real quick as we end here. She said double, and I'm going to repeat this. Doublethink is not logical. Doublethink is the word that George Orwell, for those of you just tuning in at the end here, used in his book 1984 to describe the inner conflict, inner contradiction between what someone is being shown or is being told and what the person inside knows inside themselves. And it's a contradiction in their attitude toward the victimizer. In other words, they want to love them, they want to believe them, they want to know them, and they have no concrete evidence, and yet their insides are churning up inside. They don't feel right, they feel hurt, they feel angry. This is telling you that something is dissonant. It is not congruent. And it says, she says, the denial itself can take several forms. It can manifest as continuing idealization of the person who is perpetuating the dissonance during the luring phase of the relationship. So even though you know inside, this doesn't sound right, you still want to believe him because you like him. During the luring phase of the relationship, or it can be shifting the blame of what went wrong to the relationships from him the culprit to ourselves or other victims. So it says, in fact, the easiest solution is to blame neither oneself nor the perpetrator, but the other people. It was someone else's fault. They brought us down the wrong path. So this is, these are things that happen. We're running out of time. I think this is an awesome, awesome subject. I think it's something that we need to learn. I think it will help us. And remember, the last thing, if I can get this in, because I don't have the quote, but in the Bible, there are several passages, but there's one in particular that talks about you're going to be around all kinds of magicians and prophets. They're going to be saying all kinds of good stuff, and they're even going to work miracles. They're going to do amazing things, but they're not going to be the authentic voice of truth. And what is truth? It is simple, it's clear, it's brief, and it's consistent. I am your host, Dr. Michelle.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4. You can also email me anytime, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. So, all right, what are those four things you need? They are going to be little things that you will save your mental health in any kind of communication. It really will. But you have to utilize them. And when you're in the middle of a bombardment of word salad, a little word whirlwind, it is very difficult to keep those things in your head. But I will get to them. I will say them to you now, but I want to finish this about Claudia, what she talked about with George Orwell, because he described this when he wrote his book 1984, which when he wrote the book 1984, it was like in the impossible future, right? It's like us saying 3015, writing a new book. Well, that day came and went decades ago, 1984. But he was not far off. And interestingly, this man wrote this book. George Orwell wrote that book at 43. He died at the age of 47. He died 4 years later. It's amazing. But yet he was so right on, and he's so applicable today. So let me give you those four things, and we'll get back to them. The four things you need to use as a checklist. And what you can also do is have in your mind a distillery, a water distillery, a beer distillery. I don't care what you want. Distilling. Distilling means you pour in a bunch of stuff, water, with all kinds of junk floating around in it. And it goes through these little wires and it gets heated up. And what comes out of a gallon of water is a few drops at a time of clear water, clear, drinkable water. All the gunk is out. All the toxins are out. All the bad taste are out. All the bugs are out. And it's just what it's supposed to be, H2O. So you need clarity, brevity, simplicity, and consistency. Now, if I could get to that point where I can speak that way, I would be awesome. I do in my profession, I suppose I learned to do that. I mean, I ended up doing that because that's how you listen well, and how you communicate well. But in real life, you know, my outside life, no. Somebody asked me, you know, how many times a week the other day, how long have you been coming here? This was one of my volunteers. And I started back telling him a whole history of something when really he just asked me, how long have you been coming here? Right. So, clarity, brevity, simplicity, consistency. That will be your checklist. Is it clear? If it's not clear, then you need to keep distilling down. What's the common theme? What am I hearing? And check that against your gut. If someone comes to you and after about 10 minutes of hearing them, you are hearing, I'm leaving you, or you're hearing, I just wrecked the car, or you're hearing you're fired somewhere in that rhetoric, even though they're not saying any of that, then you have to check it against your gut. What is your gut saying that you're hearing? If you're not sure, rather than ending up in confusion, because in confusion, we all do pretty much the same stuff. And I want to be able to get to that. So clarity, then brevity. Now, we all have a problem with that. I certainly do. But you're not going to get the person approaching you to be brief. But you can distill. Again, it's a gallon of water distilled to a cup. Or distilled to a quart. And that's how we diagnose a lot of things. As doctors and as psychiatrists, we might hear an hour of disjointed thoughts. And a good psychiatrist or psychologist or student of life, good mom, you hear this gallon of stuff. And all the time, it's going through your little coils heating up, and you will distill out the quart of the good stuff. Simplicity. Is it simple? Is there a simple, can you follow it? There are so many things are yes or no. You cannot get a yes or no answer from. Were you here on this night? And then you get a half hour of rhetoric. Did you vote for this bill? And you have to hear about the history of children in the United States. And it happens in our personal lives as well. So clarity, brevity, simplicity, and consistency. Is it a consistent message? Are they consistently inconsistent? Are they consistently saying one thing and delivering another? I really will stop drinking, dear. You just don't trust me enough. I really will stop drinking. I will do anything. I will never hit you again. Yet their behavior over a period of 10 years, if you plot it out on a graph, is anything but that. It follows perfectly. They say it here, and then 3 weeks later, they do it here. 2 years later, they do it there. So you have to, again, now, when you then are dealing with someone who is putting you in this cognitive dissonance. They're telling you something vague. You're not really sure what to count on. The best of your ability, it may be to no avail. Know that. Maybe they have no intention of making this a collaboration with you. But at least you can, in your own mind, with a piece of paper, what do I need? Be clear to yourself. Not making excuses for them or blaming yourself in your part. What do you need? What do you need? What's clear to you? I need to know where I'm going to be living tomorrow. I need to know if you're going to stay with me. I need to know, will I have a job? I need to know, is this a crime? You know, I need to know whatever. Bring it down to your most simple, basic points and try to get the emotion out of it if you can. But write a little list, a little like a shopping list. This is what I need. In order to do what I know I'm going to need to do, I will need these things. So you need clarity, brevity, simplicity, and consistency. And if you can begin that to your outside world, you can also use it as a checklist when someone is approaching you or when you have to think. It's very difficult to do with our political system to think about those things because you never know what's true and what's not. So I want to go back to what she says real quick as we end here. She said, I'm going to repeat this. Doublethink is not logical. Doublethink is the word that George Orwell, for those of you just tuning in at the end here, used in his book 1984 to describe the inner conflict, inner contradiction between what.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.